residential technology, lighting specialist to architect, residential tech.
Welcome to Residential Tech Talks. I'm Jeremy Glowacki, executive editor of Residential Tech Today. This week, Bill Scare joins us from Dallas, Texas, where he is CEO of Bill Scare Home Theater and Technology. Bill is one of the pioneers of the CEDIA Trade Association and its expo, and a major participant in the custom integration community. He also serves as a member of the Trade Association's Global Board of Directors. Bill's dedication to the industry has earned him both a CEDIA Fellow and a CEDIA Lifetime Achievement Award, and he's one of the friendliest people in the residential tech business. Bill Scare, great to see you again. Welcome to the podcast.
Always great to see you, Jeremy.
Bill, you've been on my list to chat with for a while, and I was saving the interview for when I had a need to just sit back and listen to somebody talk, because you can talk, and I love to listen to the things you have to say, and your industry history is just great. You got a lot of really awesome stories, and being a Texan, storytelling is just in your blood, I think. So it's great to have you on the podcast to chat.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
We saw each other at CEDIA Expo in Indianapolis. We were some of the few that actually were able to make it in. We had so much attrition with the manufacturers dropping out because of the Delta variant. And it was just great to see you and other familiar faces who were able to make it out and mask up and be safe. And I had one of my best moments of the show when I saw you with your badge, your custom-made badge that said, "This is me without a mask." So congratulations for the great idea.
Well, I kept thinking about how will anybody ever recognize me if they can't see me. So I decided that would be pretty funny. And next year I'm going to hopefully go the other direction, and I'll say, "This is me with the mask" next year. So
I think that'll be great. I hope we're past the mask phase at that point in time. I think we've talked about how you and Rich Green are great badge ribbon wearers, and you've had so many volunteer roles over the years and have attended so many events. Rich just has like this ridiculous, you know, long thing that he wears just for the humor, I think. But
yeah, it's fun. I've trimmed down. So, and I'm not carrying quite as much weight as I used to.
Yeah. You don't have anything to curve it over to keep it from dragging on the floor. So you keep that badge short, right?
Well, you get really accustomed to flinging it over your shoulder. So you can take care of business.
Well, hey, you know, it's been a few weeks since CEDIA Expo, so I don't want to go too much into it, because it's a bit old news at this point. But if you could just recall, why are you happy that you were actually able to attend CEDIA Expo despite so many manufacturers not being there and a lot of attendees who couldn't make it? What was maybe a highlight or something you felt just really good about having been there for?
Well, we started the association's first expo in 1989 in Amelia Island, Florida, and I have not missed one since. So even the virtual one last year I went to, it was not nearly as satisfying for me, because I'm a people person. So I was not going to miss my very first opportunity back to be able to be around all my friends and all the people that we love so much from the industry. So it was good for me. I'm an obsessive compulsive germaphobe anyway. So for me, I'm always wrapped up in plastic and covered up in hand sanitizer and all that sort of thing. So to me, it didn't seem like it was going to be that big a deal, but I'm thrilled that we actually got to at least get off some part of the show. So I think we had about 70 to 74 manufacturers, something like that. And I think Emerald is saying they had around 1,400 members or attendees, which is probably not far off of what I saw. And but there was a lot of space between us, and it gave us the opportunity to wear our masks around. And when we got up close to people, we could have a conversation. When it came time for that millions of different pictures that we all took together, then off came the mask for a brief second, jumped in there, got the picture, jumped back out. And so all things considered, I'm really, really pleased we went.
Yeah, I was happy to be there. It was a local trip for me. I could just drive 30 minutes downtown to get there, and a lot less pressure having that not be a flight and the investment being minimal. But it was great to see, frankly, a lot of local dealers that were there. If you weren't from the Indy area, you may not recognize that, but I did see a lot of folks who were able to just come in there. And I think it kind of turned into almost like a CEDIA Tech Summit type of event, just a little more spread out. Maybe it's a bit expensive for a tech summit for some of those manufacturers that, that stuck it out, but some of them were just happy that they were able to connect with the folks that they were and keep up the tradition of being there in person.
The manufacturers that I talked to all felt like they were going to come, because I talked to a lot of them before the show. And a lot of them were asking, well, should we go? And I told them, well, I think it's simply whatever your comfort level is. But I think as history goes on, or as we look back over time, I think it would be great to be able to say I was one that even in the worst of times in COVID era, I still showed up and showed my support for the association and for the industry. So I think that was a big part of it, but I think the manufacturers in general got to spend a lot more time with people than they ordinarily would individually. Yeah. And I think that the people who are attending got a chance to spend a lot of time with key people from all these manufacturers. And so all things considered, I think it was really a great show.
Do you, as a member of the Global Board of Directors, have any personal concerns about the future of in-person events? Or do you think that there's still always going to be a contingent of people who want to have those actual physical encounters and see the product up close, and, you know, maybe
I don't think there's going to be any change. Yeah. I don't think that's going to change, because the enthusiasm we saw from those who were there and the people that we talked to afterwards who were so sorry that they couldn't be there. I think that these shows are really, really good for us to be able to network, get to see people that we've known for the last 30 years. And that's one of the things that's always kind of interesting to me, is when we talk about a younger generation that doesn't have as much interest in being in person for education and for these shows. I think that's absolutely wrong. Mm. I think that every time that I have an opportunity to spend time with a younger person who comes to the shows, and they get an opportunity to sort of see that they're in a non-competitive environment where you can meet a whole bunch of people from other parts of the country that over time you'll be able to reach back out to and ask if you have any particular questions of something that you may not necessarily want to run by your local competitor. Right. And so I think all of those things, that when they get the opportunity, when they're exposed to these things, they're just as excited about them as those of us who've been around for a while. So I don't think in-person should go away. I don't think I think the very moment we can get our very first tech summits off and other shows like that, I think we're going to be pretty happy about it. So I think this is a bump in the road. It's a big, long one, but I think it's a bump in the road, and we'll get on with it pretty soon.
Yeah, I've been concerned over the years that attendance sort of flattens out and doesn't really grow at expos, but the folks that go and that kind of thing that you kind of catch that fever wanting to be there after you've been there once. It's that encounter with your peers, like you said. Even the buying group meetings that occur, those are a little bit more intimate, but you're sitting there at a lunch or a dinner or something. You kind of share war stories from the industry and have shared experiences that you can't get with an email or something like that. It's just not the same thing to be able to share those helpful hints and pieces of advice from folks who've been through the same kind of experience as you've been through.
When you think about this year for the board, now I have been, this is, let's see, after this term, I will have served 15 years on the board, and you have to be off 3 years, a minimum between each time, which I'm beginning to feel like that one of those congressmen or senators that we just wish would go away. but I think the biggest thing for me is that I know the integration market and the people who are involved in it. And I advocate every day for education and for our integrator members. We love our manufacturer members. We love all the other members. But at the same time, my job is, as an integrator on the board, is to really advocate for us. And I think that's one of the things that over the last year and a half, I guess, that I've been back on the board, I would say we had our very first meeting was in January of 2020, and we actually got that off in person, which worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. But then right after we got that one off, COVID struck. And mm-hmm. so since then, we've been in tiny boxes. And so we've been standing there or sitting there staring at each other in these tiny boxes. And so I would say that this is probably the very worst experience I've ever had on the CEDIA board. My fellow board members would probably agree, although it doesn't sound like the nicest comment, but it's simply because we haven't had an opportunity to be able to be in those rooms together and really, and we're spending tremendous amounts of time on, in these tiny boxes. So I think we're doing our jobs, no question about that, but it's just not the same personal experience. Yeah. And so I think that's the same thing when people come to the shows, they get an opportunity to spend time with other people, they get a chance to interact, then they go back. And so I think that's the same experience I'm having in the Zoom and all mm-hmm. the different type of meetings. Is it's just not quite as exciting, not quite as fulfilling, I think. But we're going to climb back out of this hole, so it's going to be okay.
Give us a little insight into what it's like to attend a board meeting. What sort of business does a CEDIA board cover typically in these meetings, whether in person or virtual? I've been to one in my whole career. I've only been to one. I was invited specifically to it here in Indy, and it wasn't the entire meeting. I was there for part of it and in and out for different things that I couldn't really be privy to. I'm on an HOA board. I'm president of HOA, so I know how those meetings go. But what, without having the expo as part of the responsibility of the association now, since it's owned by Emerald, are you mostly talking about educational opportunities then and other membership type benefits, or what would you typically cover?
Yeah, I think I was there that time you got a chance to duck in there. So it's funny that... if you just come from one board meeting sometime, or you just get that opportunity to duck in and duck out, you don't really see all the work that everybody's doing on your behalf. And so we're discussing things like we're getting updates on things like what's going on with our government affairs. So okay. Darren Riemann is the greatest asset we have in CEDIA, no question about it. He has an opportunity to work with all the different state houses across the United States and is incredibly well respected by these folks. So now, as compared to back in the old days, these people didn't know who we were. Well, now when legislation comes up, they call Darren and ask for a position on it. So that stuff is pretty important to the U.S. Now, we are a global organization, but we haven't been able to expand our government affairs to nearly the same scale worldwide as we have been for the U.S., but those days will come. But for right now, we're keeping up with what's going on and trying to decide if there's something that we need to do to react to specific things. Like you say, education is an enormous part of what we're doing now. We're still working on workforce development. As a matter of fact, in the U.K., they have just gotten... a new program where they're going to be able to do apprenticeships in the UK. It's a little bit more technical here in the US, but we're working on the same sort of things there. Of course, we still have our tech summits. We have ISE, CEDIA and Infocom, or AVIXA, own 50% of that show each. So between the two of us, we own the ISE show. And that has been an extraordinarily successful show for us and will continue to be as soon as we can get everybody back into one giant room again. So there's a lot that we have on our plate, but it's all the conversations seem to spend all of our time on what's right for our members. How can we deliver more benefits? And you know, we're always looking for more ideas. And so if anybody has specific ideas of things that we could do to deliver more value to the menu, to our members, then by all means, text me, email me, call me, let me know what you've got. But that's those are the kind of things we're always working on, just trying to make the industry a little bit better and more stable for all of us. And I think that one of the things that I learned a long time ago that was kind of interesting was that you'd think the American Medical Association, the AMA, would have all of the doctors as members in that in their organizations. But they have about 17% of doctors, and that turns out that's not far off of what we make up also. So of the people who are actively involved in the integration market, then we have about 17%, give or take, of those people that are actually engaged in this market. We'd love to have a lot more of them, because things like those, the job that Darren does out there working on behalf of the members for in various legislatures all over the country, those things don't just benefit CEDIA members, that benefits the industry. And so a number of years ago, we switched over from calling ourselves a trade association to an industry association. So even if people are not members of the association, which we want all of them we can get, but even if they're not, we're still working on their behalf, whether they know it or not.
And I know that there's a vacuum at the leadership side at this point with the association, only because there's a search in underway for the CEO. If you had, and this may be awkward for you because as a member of the board, you may not be able to speak on this, but if you had your druthers as a member of the board, as a member of the industry, as to whether you find someone who's really specifically suited to being a trade association CEO or someone from the industry, what do you think would be better for the CEDIA Association?
Well, I'm not sure if you can really split it like that, because the way we the way that it's having to be looked at is industry, but it's got to be industry with a strong focus on our trade organization also. So it's kind of a an interesting conversation going back and forth. Now the search team has been working pretty working very hard on this for most of a year, and a lot of that time it was taken up in deciding exactly what was it that we were looking for. And so we took a lot of input from a lot of different places, and everybody gave all they could to the search firm, and then the committee that's been working on this has been working closely with the search firm. And they've come up with the best candidates for us to be able to sit in front of us. So coming up very shortly, we're right at the very end of this this search, finally. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought it would take this long to get this done. But I think this time we're, we haven't always been really careful about the choices, but we are working very, very hard to get the best choice for the association and for the industry right now. So in the next couple of days, we're going to have an update on that from the search group. And so really looking forward to that. So I would say everybody just hold on. We're almost there. It's taken a long time to get here, but we're going to have somebody, we're going to have the right person, and we're going to do everything we can do to train them, whether they're from the industry or whether they're not. If they're the right fit, then we're going to do everything we can do to get them as excited about the industry as we are.
We'll continue our conversation with Bill Scarer after the break.
Founded in 2005 by a team of highly skilled audio veterans, Wet Sounds is an award-winning, Texas-based marine audio company, bringing a level of performance, style, and durability unparalleled in the audio industry. Wet Sounds is proud to introduce you to the Venue Series 110-volt, 1200-watt 4-channel amplifier system. The VS1200 amplifier was specifically designed to power Venue Series products while utilizing a 110-volt power source. Included is the VS-LS-ENC, a purpose-built landscape enclosure designed to house the Wet Sounds VS-1200 amp with the plug-and-play media center in harsh outdoor environments. Learn more, visit wetsounds.com.
Welcome back. I'm Residential Tech Today Executive Editor Jeremy Glowacki, and I'm talking with Bill Scarer, CEO of Bill Scare Home Theater and Technology in Dallas, Texas. Bill, you and I have been talking about the industry and about CEDIA Expo. And the one thing, if folks don't know you, which I'd be surprised if anybody doesn't know you at this point, but I'd love to just start going back in time and discuss when it was and how it was that you got into this industry in the first place, way, way back when, before I knew you. What was that step coming out of, were you in the Air Force? Was it
yes.
In the military? Okay, so you're in the Air Force.
Yes, management analyst.
Okay, so you had a tech experience there, it sounds like.
Well, tech is kind of funny when you think about the Air Force in a few years ago when I was in it. The Air Force is one of the most highly technical organizations on the planet now. But even back in the day, we had a lot of incredible firepower, but we didn't have computers back then. We didn't have all the really amazing things that we have to work with now. But I actually, my dad had a TV shop back when I was about 11 years old. So he was not one of those fellows that was likely to let you hang around the house. And so what he needed was somebody to wipe down the TVs that were on his show floor. He had somebody to go out and help install antennas and deliver TVs. And so from the time I was 11 years old, I've been engaged with what we would call video now, but we were in the TV business back then. So after I left and went to the Air Force, I came back and thought, I don't really know what I wanted to do. It looked like I had to do something right away to be able to eat. Otherwise, this was going to get pretty rough. Yeah. So I went to work for a company called Woolco, which was a giant store, kind of like a Kmart, but it was owned by Woolworths. And they had me selling video recorders and appliances and all sorts of things. And what we figured out pretty quickly was that people were not able to install them, and they weren't able to run them because it was such an interesting, different technology. You know, it's kind of funny. I tell people, you push the tape in, you push the top down, then you go in there and you turn that varactor dial to whatever channel you want, and you push those two big buttons. But it escaped people. They really didn't get it. And so we started doing video recorder installations for about $30. So what we would do is go out and show them how to use it and install it. And that was pretty great until we found out that most people didn't have antennas that were worth a flip. So we started into doing television antennas, which led us to satellite dishes, which led us to audio, which led us to all of these things, lighting control and motorized shades, and all these things that have come along over the years have just been, have allowed it to be the most creative and exciting industry I can ever imagine having been in, because it's always changing. And so that's why I feel like there'll always be a need for a CEDIA, because you've got to be constantly learning in order to be able to stay up with what's going on. So now that we're doing voice recognition and all these kind of things, it's gotten to be pretty exciting. So for me, I didn't make the decision one day to suddenly go into this business because when I started there really wasn't one. Okay. And so we'd been in business for about 10 years when CEDIA came along, and when we got the opportunity to start CEDIA. So Tom Doherty and Chris Stevens were really the big movement toward this. But I got to be at the second meeting, and then from that point on, I've never looked back. And so I think that. Like I say, I had done this for quite a long time before. And so I was an old guy in the industry when we first started this. But it's been a lot of fun. And I'd say that's one of the things that we work on really hard now is to try to get young people into the industry, because it really is a viable, real career path. Yeah. And because I've done this for 42 years at this point. And so that's a pretty long career to be in the same thing, same industry.
Well, yeah, it's treated you well, apparently. And one of the things I always hear about and have shared with you as well, it were the famous barbecues when Cedia would be in the Dallas downtown area, and you live nearby and could host folks and have barbecue. So
yeah, that was kind of fun, because in 92 they had we'd just come to Dallas for the first time, and that Frank White character was sitting at a table at the Flamingo Hilton, I think it was, in one of those clamshell booths, and that was saying, hey, you Cedia is going to be in Dallas next year, why don't we have a big party at your house? And I was thinking, well, that'd be fine. And he said, maybe we can do a couple hundred manufacturers. Well, that was cute, but we ended up with about 1,100 people over at the house wow. the first time. And so it was such a great success in 92 that we decided to do it again in 93. And we ended up with 2,100 of our closest friends over for dinner. And so we rented an old ghost town the next year in 94. And in 94, we had about 3,600 people come. And we did insane things. Like we had a helicopter flying alongside the buses that was, had a signboard on the side that flashed, "Welcome to Dallas, Cedia." We had a 10-piece brass band. It was Bill Tillman that used to be the lead saxophonist for Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Mm. You know, we made our own casino and printed our own money. We did all kinds of crazy things. And the Runco quad stack is what everybody always talks about, is that those four projectors that we synced together on a 25-foot screen. That it was really a big deal. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy. So we thought, okay, 95, somebody else will do one. Well, nobody did. So in 96, the last year we were in Dallas, then I decided, all right, I got one more in me. So we rented Old City Park in downtown Dallas, and we had about 4,500 people come. And there's things like all the same things everybody had done before, but we added Velcro Olympics and, you know, all kinds of ridiculous things. But it let Cedia become known as the place that was a party. It was a lot of fun. So it wasn't just booths. It wasn't just looking at product. It wasn't just education, but it was an opportunity for people to develop relationships and get together, because I wouldn't let anybody wear a badge at any of the shows or at any of the parties, because I wanted to introduce them all. So we did everything we could possibly do to introduce people from all over the world. And I still have a bottle, interestingly enough, of sake in my refrigerator that a gentleman from Japan brought over in 92, because he was so humbly pleased and impressed that I had invited him to my home for a party, that he brought me a bottle of sake that I've never opened.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, so, unfortunately for me, your last party was the first Cedia that I attended. So I wasn't privy to that, but I got all the stories. But what I did get to experience was when you created the famous, infamous, whatever you want to call it, fly-in home theater concept, which was the fact that you're a pilot, a licensed pilot, and I've talked to you a couple times about flying. And one of the things I learned from you was the tolerance of these planes, and how, I was a little, I guess, shaken by maybe some turbulence coming in or something. He said, you know, these commercial airlines, they can take a lot more than you realize. And so you kind of went into how hard you can slam a plane down if you're landing it by yourself with, you got customers in the back, you're not going to do that. And ever since then, I've felt so much more comfortable flying. So thank you for that. But back to the fly-in home theater, you had a hangar out at an airport there in Dallas, where you also had a theater demo space that you could fly in customers who had their own planes, I guess. Is that right. The concept there?
Well, we had two airplanes that we flew, one that was more for landing on unimproved strips at ranches and things like that, where we did projects and we could do a service call in, in an hour and a half or something to South Texas, instead of having to drive for 6 hours or something to get down there. We'd just take a quick flight down, take whatever we needed with us, and we would get the customer back up and running in a way, or add the new equipment or whatever we needed to do. So that was pretty great. And then we were lucky enough to have been contacted by the fellow that used to be president of Walmart. Jack Shoemaker many years ago, and he passed away several years back, which was tragic, but he'd been a customer for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And he liked us because we could be from our office here in Mesquite, Texas, outside of Dallas, all the way to his place in Bentonville, Arkansas, in an hour and a half. Wow. And so it was difficult to get to the other side of Dallas in an hour and a half, much less to Bentonville, Arkansas.
Sure.
But so what happened with the fly-in theater was we had purchased a few large hangars at the airport. And so Cat came along, Brian Barr and Michael Barr, and they wanted to do some really ridiculous theater. So we built what would be over $1 million theater in our hangar at the Mesquite Airport. And so it took me about 9 months. And I'd done a lot of theaters before that. And I'd done a lot of cat theaters before that. But I'd never gone as far as we went with this one. And so we spent, we'd had 15,000 pounds of steel in it. I mean, it was just, the whole thing was just so over the top. But it, but what it did give us was an extraordinary look at what it takes to really do a great home theater. Mm-hmm. And so that there were 75 drivers in there. It was, you know, it took six computers with microphones every place and several days for us to be able to tweak that thing in after we finally got it all done. But we learned so much from doing it. So instead of trying to figure out how we're going to sell that many theaters to every individual customer, we decided to open it up to anybody that was at that time more than 100 miles away from us. Mm. And so we had people come in from Austin and from all over the country that would fly their customers in. And we would do a half of a day session, morning, afternoon, or evening session. And we would just explain to their builder, architect, designer, and the family what it is a home theater should be like and what it took to actually create something like that. And so people would pay us $4,000 a session for me to do my presentation on all of the stuff that was in there. But we weren't really trying to sell specific equipment as much as we were selling the concept of what it is that, that their rooms could be. So as it turned out, most of the theaters built after people had visited there were 400,000 and up because they really understood what it took to create that sort of an experience. And that's really what it is. That's an experience.
Yeah, it was quite an experience for sure. I loved it. Now, in recent years, you've kind of changed career paths a little bit. You're obviously running, what I said, Bill Scarrow Home Theater and Technology. You've done some sales rep work in the past as well, correct? You've kind of
well, what evolved. I've done. So after I sold the company in 2014, I had a little money in my pocket, and so I decided to invest in a couple of different companies, and then I took over another manufacturer when they were bringing kind of resurrecting a manufacturer. And I did everything from design their programs for returns to shipping to, I mean, everything. We started with nothing. We had a fully functional company after a year worth of a lot of hard work. And so I've also helped a number of companies in the meantime with on a consulting basis, helping them get their products in front of a lot more people. And so that has been actually an awful lot of fun and has given me an opportunity to be able to really know a lot more of the industry. Now what I do is I still juggle a lot of different companies and helping other people get in this business. But now I started another company that was the Bill Scare Home Theater and Technology, just to be able to do smaller projects.
Okay.
Because a lot of the projects that we used to do were 3 and 4 year long projects. As great as they were, because they got us on the cover of every magazine out there, and story after story after story about our projects, that was awesome. Except for now, I don't have the same passion for doing those projects that are going to take that long anymore. Yeah. So now what I do is on a much, much smaller scale. And I jokingly tell everybody I don't work with anybody that I don't like. Mm. And so it's kind of a great place to be. Yeah. But all that really is to say that I've just decided to work with a little bit with projects that move along faster and with people that I really enjoy now.
We're talking a little bit, obviously, at the beginning about CEDIA Expo. It wasn't the best place to see trends or observe technology trends this year just because of the lack of companies there. But with you still working on these projects and being a member of CEDIA's board and observing everything, where are some of the trends that you're looking at in either in your projects or maybe just colleagues that you know in the industry who are doing things? You mentioned voice control earlier. What are some of the other developing product technology trends that you can kind of say are making an impact or maybe potentially?
There are a lot of things. There are a lot of things out there that I think are very valuable for us. And when we started doing lighting control, it was in the 80s. So it's really interesting to see where we are with lighting control nowadays, but because it's something that is wildly more attainable. Mm-hmm. For my previous clients, they had to be the uber wealthy to be able to afford projects like what we did for their lighting control. And to be perfectly honest, when I first started doing it, I was not all that. I wasn't sold on it as much. And so one of the manufacturers said, here, I'm going to give you this great price, but you've got to have this in your home. Mm. So once I put it in my own home and started living with it, I can't even imagine how anybody could live without lighting control anymore. But so lighting control was a big part of it. But what we weren't, there was always a missing piece in there. And that has been the fixtures. And so we had to rely on designers or electricians or others, let's just say others, to go find the light fixtures that we were ultimately going to control. And so what that led to is a situation where you could have some flickering and different situations where the lights they've come a long way now, but they weren't very good at dimming. And mm-hmm. so now dimming is such an important part that we're able to marry up the appropriate light fixtures with the appropriate lighting system and the lighting scheme that you want for whatever room that you're in. So now that manufacturers, and there were a number of lighting manufacturers there that were showing the fixtures. And I think that's been one of those things we've been missing for a while. Yeah. And now that we've got that, I think that's going to really help our industry quite a lot. The motorized shades, when they came along, that was another one of those things that was exciting and new. But now it's just sort of a part of what we do. And so if you're not doing shades in every project that you're involved in, then you're missing out on offering a really great experience for your customers. So, and now as we begin to tie all those things together, so whether it's shades and lighting and audio and video and home theater, all of those things now are getting to the point where we can do a lot more about artificial intelligence, if you will, mm-hmm. To be able to get voice control that actually works. And so the name who I will not say that's right above me and others and like Josh AI's product and that sort of thing. There are a lot of differences between them. And things that we have to kind of remember is those things that we're buying from our Amazon and all the other places that are out there that voice control is coming in. A lot of those things are not very secure. So yes, we can integrate with them if we need to, but I think that what's coming and what's a big part of like what Josh does is they're not putting all of their all of your private information out on the web, mm-hmm. and they don't have an open mic into your most private moments. Right. So I think that's one of the things that I noticed also at the was that Guard Dog, I think was the name of the mm-hmm. The company that was there, that a number of our industry folks have been working with them to on more internet security. And so all the integration in the world that we do is great unless it's open to the whole world. So I think the fact that that people like Josh and Guard Dog and a lot of others are out there working to be able to make your home automation system, your smart home, if you will, more secure for you and your family, I think that's a really great trend that I'm seeing a lot of right now.
Well, great. Well, hey, Bill, I really appreciate your time today. It's been awesome catching up and getting to know your career a little bit better. And I know that anytime you see anyone in person, you're happy to give them some sage advice on things that you've experienced and stuff that you've seen. So if anyone wants to reach out to you and get to know you better or has a question for you, what's the best way to contact you?
Well, I'm always available at bill@billscare.com. So it's bill@billscare.com. And that's probably the fastest way to reach me. Although I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on Twitter, but you're not going to see me there very much because I have so many other things going on. I'm not always the Twitter guy.
Right.
But I keep up. But yeah, just reach out to me by email or and my website is the same. It's billscare.com. So you can kind of get a chance to see a little bit about what I've been doing lately.
Great. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time to chat today.
Always my pleasure. Great to see you, Jeremy.
Bill Scare is CEO of Bill Scare Home Theater and Technology in Dallas, Texas. That wraps up today's show. If you're new to Residential Tech Talks, please subscribe to the weekly podcast and consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite platform. Also, check out all the latest residential tech news at the magazine's website, restechtoday.com, where you can also subscribe to the bi-monthly print or digital magazine and our Tuesday and Friday email newsletters. Until next time, please stay safe, stay inspired, and let us know if you have a great story to tell.
Residential Tech Lighting Specialist to Residential Tech Talks. Home Automation Smart Device, Home or Smart House.